This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Hey,
I want to scream so loud for you. I'm so proud of you. There you go. So proud of you. It's a good theme for Mother's Day. Here on Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. A gorgeous spring Mother's Day at that. My name is Brad Porter. Rudy Salazar is running point today. Jed Marshall got all of our guests lined up today. And we have a lot of good stuff to talk about. Obviously, the Royals. We'll talk a little golf. We'll talk a little Kansas Speedway from the races last night. And we have some good guests lined up. Coming up at 9:25, Howard Richmond, our good friend, former writer at the Kansas City Star, now the associate editor of GCM Magazine for the Golf Course Superintendents Association. He's going to join us and talk a little Players' Championship. To me, one of the most picturesque golf tournaments you can watch. Now, my personal favorites are always the British Open. I love seeing the different courses that they take it around. And, the Masters is the Masters. But the Players' Championship down in Florida, always fantastic, especially with the Island Green on 17. And the fans are packed in elbow to elbow and 15 deep. And they all want to see if the top professionals can get it onto the island without knocking it into the water. It reminds me a little bit of the Phoenix Open, the hole where all the fans stand around the stadium hole, I think it's 16, and fans cheer or boo based on where you place the ball, and it's a lot of fun. So Howard Richmond at 9:25. At 10 o'clock, Kirk Elliott, our good friend, half of the Racing Boys, which you hear regularly here on Sports Radio 810 WHB with their own shows on the weekends and then guest appearances throughout the week, and they have a great website as well. Kirk Elliott was out at Kansas Speedway all weekend, and he's going to tell us about that. If you have not seen night racing at Kansas Speedway, it is a terrific event. I talked about this a little bit yesterday. I've been to it twice. My youngest son is a NASCAR fan. He's a Kyle Busch fan, so I've taken him a couple of times. One year was the rain out or the rain delays that took it to like midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. No rain delays last night, thankfully, but had a couple of big spectacular accidents at the end. So Kirk Elliott at 10 o'clock. And then around 10:40, Josh Briscoe is going to join us. Josh is hosting Baseball Tonight at 11 o'clock this morning. So Baseball Tonight this morning at 11 o'clock to get you ready because the Royals and Cleveland play at noon. So he'll be in. And we'll talk about a little bit about everything. And Josh likes to talk about everything under the sun. And I'm going to get his opinion on something completely non-sports related. If you know the singer Childish Gambino, Donald Glover, he was on Saturday Night Live, was it last week or 2 weeks ago, and got a lot of great reviews.
Yeah, just last Saturday. He was the host and musical guest.
And musical guest, yeah. And so he put out a video last week called This Is America, and I believe it's got 95 million views. It's I guess you could call it a little bit controversial. There's one scene in particular that disturbed me, but from his point of view, I understand why it was in the video. And yesterday, or in the last couple of days, somebody has covered about a minute of that video, taking out the music and putting in Call Me Maybe by Carly Rae Jepsen, which is funny. Some people don't like it because it takes away from the original message of the video, so maybe I'll find out what Josh thinks about that. Royals in Cleveland yesterday. We were doing Baseball Tonight yesterday, and we got the weather forecast, and Jeff Montgomery was on the show from Cleveland and said, look, we've got rain. We may not even play this game. So it was delayed about an hour and 15 minutes. Finally got going. I wish it would have been rained out because did not go well once again. Royals lost 6-2. Good start for the Royals, and this is what used to happen before, like, the 13 season. Every time the Royals would get a run, they would give one back in the next inning. So good start for the Royals. Got a couple of runners on base, second and third. Salvador Perez does the right thing, gets the ball over to the right side, drives in John Jay. Then Cleveland ties it in the bottom of the second. Royals get the lead back in the third. Jorge Soler double. John Jay scores again, and Cleveland ties it back up in the bottom of the third on the first of Francisco Lindor's two home runs. John Jay scoring at will. But that was it. The Royals were done scoring for the rest of the day after the third inning. Jacob Junis held the line until the sixth. Cleveland scoring on a Michael Brantley double, an Alonso single.
Junis knocked out of the game. Kyle McCarthy comes in the seventh and gives up Lindor's second home run of the game. 6-2, Royals offense continued to lay dormant. Jake Junis, a mixed performance, 5 2/3, 6 hits, 4 earned runs, 7 Ks. He had that stretch before the sixth where he'd sat down 8 consecutive batters and looked nasty again. The slider looked good again, but just couldn't get out of his own way, couldn't hold the line long enough. And Clevinger was spectacular for Cleveland. 7 2/3, 8 hits, 2 earned runs, 5 Ks. And Clevinger, okay, he plays for Cleveland. They're a division rival. I get that. He's a fun player to watch. He had on the pink cleats yesterday. It was a celebration for Mother's Day. I have his mom's name on him. And before that, he'd been wearing these, for lack of a better term, tie-dye cleats. Had a big sunflower on them, kind of flashy. And he got a letter from Major League Baseball saying, don't wear the cleats or we're going to fine you. And other players around the league were responding back to him. Things like Major League Baseball wants to get younger. They want the games faster. They want the better demographics. They want more people attracted to the game. And now you're sending letters to a player who's just trying to have a little fun with his cleats. Tell him you're going to fine him. You know what Clevinger's response was? It makes my mom happy. Makes my family happy. And if that's the cost of making them happy, I'll gladly pay the fine. Good for Mark Clevinger. Good for Mark Clevinger. Because baseball likes to crack down on these stupid things. Like sometimes players put a message on their hat to a friend of theirs. They give it a little slack if somebody passes away. But they crack down on these things all the time. It's like kind of like what the NFL used to be and still is at times. They take the fun out of the game. The players just want to have a little fun. You ever watch a soccer game? You see the cleats those guys wear? They're all wild. They're non-uniform. They're lime green. They're fire orange. Whatever you want to call them. So baseball needs to dial it back a little bit. And Clevinger, if you want to be the leader of the guys who are going to bring fun into the game and accept the fines, go for it. I'm behind you. I'm not going to help you pay for it. But it's good stuff. The bottom line, though, is Clevinger was very good against the Royals, and I anticipated a great pitching matchup, and it was pretty good for 5 innings. And then the wheels came off a little bit for Junis, and then McCarthy gave up the home run. And I saw a tweet, I believe it was from Rainey Gizzarelli, who says every time he watches Lindor, and he's on fire this year, except on defense, he's been booting the ball all over the infield. But whenever he sees Lindor have this kind of success, it reminds him of the Royals drafting Bubba Starling ahead of him in the draft. And now Bubba's hurt again. He was already missed the start of the season, had to go to extended spring training. He had the sore oblique muscle. Then he got some, 40 or 50 at-bats in and then went to Omaha, and he's hurt again. And now he's going to miss 1 to 2 months. So things going from bad to worse for Bubba Starling, who is... He's going to make a break year. If he doesn't crack the big leagues, now look, there are guys who make it after 8 or 9 years in the minors. We've seen it. We've seen it here in Kansas City. Rex Hudler is the poster boy for guys getting their chance late in their careers, 10 years in the minors before Rex Hudler got his call-up. So it can happen. But in terms of trying to break into the big leagues, with his hometown Kansas City Royals, the window, if it's not closed already, is closing fast.
And it's probably safe to say the window, at least of him being a big-time contributing player.
That's out.
Like I think it's possible. Again, fourth outfielder, really good at defense. I think he can play all three spots really well. There is power, obviously, in the bat. That can be a valuable weapon off the bench.
Right.
I think the days, though, of him starting 130 games in center field are probably over, sucks because, like, I was super excited when the Royals drafted him. I think, like most people, because – he was a local kid.
Yeah,
I played against
terrific
him in high school.
Athlete.
Yeah, I played. It's like our high schools were in the same league, so I had to play against them. And like with most kids, like you hear about kids at other schools, and like you hear rumors, and like not, and they're basically all fake. Like I remember hearing about a kid my freshman year, he threw his like an 85-mile-per-hour slider as a freshman, and then you see it, and his fastball is like in the low 70s. You're like, this kid doesn't throw hard,
right?
And you hear about Bubba, and you didn't believe it at all because like I'm a junior, he's a freshman. Like, sure. And then all of a sudden he's throwing fastballs at 90 miles per hour and he's hitting baseballs 400 plus feet. And you're just like, oh, okay.
He's
yeah,
legit.
This is the real deal. These rumors are true.
How did most of your matchups against Bubba Starling's teams go?
Oh, Gardner pretty much killed us, like, in every sport. Yeah, because, like, the league, because, like, Gardner's obviously moved up, and they're in different leagues now, and, like, my school's in a different league, especially back at that time when I was in high school. We had schools as big as Gardner to as small as, like, I don't know, like, if you know Central Heights, which is basically Richmond, mm-hmm. Kansas, which is, like, 1,000 people. So mm-hmm. you had the super small 3A schools to, at the time, Gardner was only 5A. And so you had this big, giant, like, difference in, like, how big some schools were and small. And, like, we were a pretty good school, but, like, Gardner was the one school that just destroyed. I mean, they destroyed pretty much everybody. Like, they just would just roll over us. Well, we would play their C team, like, in junior high, like, the C team.
Right.
And the C team would beat us by, like, 40 points. Like, they're, like, Gardner was just at a whole another level than basically everybody else.
Well, I guess if Bubba Starling needs inspiration to keep going, which I don't think he's going to walk away from the game. That's not what I'm saying here. But if he needs inspiration to keep going to eventually get that shot in the big leagues, he needs to look no further than Jason Adam, another Kansas City kid who's currently on the Royals roster. 8 years in the minor leagues, 4 arm surgeries in the minor leagues. Drafted by the Royals in 2010, traded to the Twins in 14 when the Royals needed a bat, Josh Willingham, for the playoff run. Ended up with the Padres last year, cut loose, came back to the Royals, and now he's in the big leagues. So I guess if you're looking for an inspiration, battling through injuries, spending a lot of time in the minor leagues, Jason Adam would be your inspiration, another local kid. Some of the good stuff from the game yesterday, despite the Royals losing 6-2, Jorge Soler and the top of the batting order, the 1-2 batters from yesterday, John Jay and Jorge Soler, 3 hits each. Jorge Soler's batting average up to .333 and a slash line, which somebody tweeted out last night, and Cody Tapp tweeted back, that's a sext with these numbers. Slash line for Soler, .333, .434, .548, and an OPS of .982. That is stout. I would like to know, Terry Bradshaw is the hitting coach now for the Royals, and he spent a lot of time in the minor leagues in the Royal system being a coach. I would like to talk to him at some point and find out what they worked on last year at AAA Omaha, because he didn't come back, what they were able to work on and refine, and what they did, what they gave him to work on in the off-season program, he has his own program, and what they've been working on this year, because everything is clicking for Jorge Soler right now. He's patient at the plate. He's drawing walks to get on base. Hitting the ball with power, spraying it to all fields, it's come together for Jorge Soler. Now, he's going to hit a slump at some point. Everybody does. But the work they've done with him, as well as on defense, has been terrific. So the top of the order, John Jay and Jorge Soler, were about the only productive parts of the order. They got 6 hits combined. The Royals had 8 total. Same story for Cleveland, their top of the order, Lindor, going 4-for-4 with 4 runs, a couple of RBIs, 2 home runs, and a double. He's just raking right now. Brantley, 3-for-4, a couple of runs, 2 RBIs, and a double. And they're going to have to do it again today. And I don't envy today's assignment, going against Corey Kluber. I was looking at numbers. It's Danny Duffy against Corey Kluber. Again, first pitch at 12:10, baseball tonight at 11 o'clock with Josh Briscoe. Corey Kluber's been hittable lately. You know, you look at his ERA and it's 2.62. Wow, it's pretty good. His record's 5-2. Woo, that's decent. But Corey Kluber has been hittable lately. In his last 4 games, Kluber has given up 3 earned runs in each of those 4 games. That's not a lot, 3 earned runs. But he's been hittable. And those were games against Baltimore, Seattle, Texas, and Milwaukee. Also, in those last 4 starts, Corey Kluber has given up 8 home runs. So teams are taking him deep. Scoring runs, taking him deep. He's been able to do Corey Kluber things, though, and limit the damage, because that's just how good he is. Okay, I might give up my 3 runs. My team's going to score 4 and 5 and 6, because we knock it over the wall, too. We drive in runs. But Corey Kluber is hittable. Unfortunately, so is Danny Duffy. He got his first win of the season last week in that game against Baltimore, the 15-7 game, 5 1/3, 6 hits, 1 earned run, a couple of walks, 5 strikeouts. And the thing that still bugs me about Danny Duffy starts, not only the losses piling up, but it's the pitches. In the 5 1/3 against Baltimore, 101 pitches. He always says that James Shields told him, when James Shields came to Kansas City, he always told him 200. And what do you mean 200? You need to get to 200 innings in a season. You have to if you're going to be an ace. I need you to get to 200 innings. If Danny Duffy continues to throw 101 pitches in 5 1/3, and he's been doing that consistently, over 100 pitches in less than six innings, he's not getting to 200. He's never been there in the first place, but he's definitely not getting there this year. He was able to lower his ERA by almost a half a point, but Danny Duffy has to get more consistent and keep the pitch count under control. So, baseball tonight coming up at 11 o'clock. NASCAR last night at Kansas Speedway. Like I said, racing under the lights at Kansas Speedway is a spectacular spectator event. It starts while the sun is setting. So you still got the sun. It's a great atmosphere. And then the sun completely sets. The lights are on. You see the sparks on the cars on the track, and it's fantastic. Kevin Harvick has now become part owner of Kansas Speedway, if you didn't know that. I don't even know if Kansas Speedway knows that. But he won both races at KCK last season. Then last night, with a fresh set of tires, he reeled in Martin Truex Jr. with one lap to go to make it three straight wins at Kansas Speedway. That, folks, is dominance. Jeff Gordon used to dominate Kansas Speedway when he was racing. Kevin Harvick is doing it now. And his season this year is insane for Kevin Harvick. 5 wins in 12 races. That doesn't happen in NASCAR ever. 5 wins in 12 races to start the season. That also ties his personal high, and he's got 24 races left to go to break his own personal high. Rounding out the top five last night, Joey Logano, Kyle Larson, Denny Hamlin. No wrecks in this race until the final 30 laps, if you didn't see it. Final 30 laps, and these were scary wrecks. One of the wrecks saw one car get on top of the other, and it scared the living daylights out of me watching it. Because these guys are going 200 miles an hour. They're not braking when there's a wreck. They might be braking. They're not slowing down very much. So one car gets backwards, and it's the tires are on the hood and look like they're about ready to go through the windshield of the car behind. And what I'm thinking is, not only could that tire come through the windshield, it's also still spinning and maybe coming right at your face. So that was frightening. There were two big wrecks at the end, and unfortunately, the second wreck took out our hometown favorites, Clint Bowyer from Emporia, Kansas, Jamie McMurray from Joplin. So that was disappointing because I know Clint Bowyer wants so bad to win at Kansas Speedway. I heard him on Between the Lines with Kevin Keatsman this week, and he said, you know, not only would it be good for himself and his fans, it'd be good for Kansas Speedway to have a local winner. Didn't happen. Got wrecked out at the end. So Kevin Harvick, your winner last night at Kansas Speedway. And we're going to talk about that with Kirk Elliott coming up at 10 o'clock. Coming up next, we're going to talk with Howard Richman, associate editor of GCM Magazine, used to write for the Kansas City Star. Talk to him about the Players' Championship going on down in Florida. You're going to see a nonstop highlights of Tiger Woods and Jordan Spieth this morning because they shot 65s. They threw out 65s. But they're both 11 shots behind Webb Simpson, who just went insane this week. He's got a 7-shot lead. So we'll talk with Howard Richman about the big lead for Webb Simpson. Tiger having a really big bounce-back day on Saturday along with Jordan Spieth, and all sorts of good stuff going on down there. So we'll take a quick timeout, and then we'll get Howard Richman on the line. You're listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. Rudy Salazar is running the board. We are in the Rally House Studios, and you're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB on a beautiful Mother's Day in Kansas City.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Don't know if anybody can sabotage Webb Simpson down at the Players' Championship at TPC Sawgrass in the PGA Tour. Coming up later at 10 o'clock, Kirk Elliott, half of the Racing Boys, is going to join us to talk about Kansas Speedway And the big race last night, Kevin Harvick winning for the third consecutive time at Kansas Speedway. And about 10:40, Josh Briscoe is going to join us to get us set for a little Royals baseball and anything else that might pop up. Because with Josh, you just don't know. But we're going to talk a little golf here. Players Championship going on down in Florida with Howard Richmond, who is the associate editor of GCM Magazine for the Golf Course Superintendents Association and wrote for the Kansas City Star for many, many years. Howard, how are you on this beautiful Mother's Day Sunday morning?
Well, it's good so far. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Look, the headlines are always going to surround Tiger Woods and, to a certain extent, Jordan Spieth. And yesterday, golf fans went absolutely crazy because Jordan Spieth and Tiger Woods both barely made the cut. They almost didn't make it into the final 2 days of the Players' Championship, which is, to me, is one of the most compelling tournaments to watch on television because the course is beautiful and the island hole on 17 is great. But Tiger Woods and Jordan Spieth go out and throw down 66 or 65s, and they're both 11 shots behind Webb Simpson, for crying out loud.
I know. It's crazy, isn't it? I mean, he's just been unbelievable. It's kind of what we expected from him when he won the U.S. Open 6 years ago. I remember thinking, you know, this kid's going to win several majors, and just kind of disappeared for a while. And look at him now. I mean, he's just been flawless. I mean, that's... I mean, he rinsed it on 17 a couple days ago, and he still has a huge lead. It didn't matter.
Well, as we watch Tiger Woods and Jordan Spieth, they're going to be paired together today. I'm assuming that'll be the largest gallery next to the final pairing. But for Tiger Woods, at 65, that was his best round ever on the course at TPC Sawgrass. He had a couple of 66s before. But 65 was his best, and this is after not playing well on Thursday and Friday. So I don't know what to make of it. I don't want to do the overblown Tiger's back, and he's gonna win a tournament this year. But to play as poorly as he did for 2 days, go out and work on something and find something, and to throw down a 65, that's got to be nothing but positive for Tiger and his fans.
Oh, I agree. And for a while now this year, we've seen signs of him piecing it together here and there, good spots, still some struggles along the way. But it just kind of seems like he's kind of building to something really big. And that round yesterday was a real good sign of it. I mean, it's for him to shoot a 65. I mean, I don't want to say he's back. He's not the same old Tiger yet, but he's heading that direction in certain ways. And it makes it exciting, doesn't it? I mean,
it does.
We love watching it.
Yeah. And I think obviously what's happened to him physically and other things that have happened over the years have humbled him quite a bit. He's a lot more brutally honest with not only himself, but with the media and the fans about his game. When he has a bad round, he'll point out everything that went wrong, whereas before he may have said, well, I made a mistake here, or maybe my caddy had a bad read there or something. It was always something else, but not totally 100% his fault. But he's owned it, and he owned yesterday's fantastic round. He pointed out the things he did well and the fact that he needs to do that for four rounds, which I'm waiting to see. I think we're all waiting to see. Can he do it for four rounds?
Right, and we talked about this last time you had me on. I think we're seeing more of the complete Tiger, maybe not necessarily just as a golfer, but as a person, a human, and the way he reacts with media, fans, everybody. You know, it's so neat to see some of the side of Tiger that we didn't always get to see when he was so laser focused. And I understand that. I mean, that's he had goals and what he wanted to do, but we didn't get to really get to know him. And now he's opened up so much more. And I think it's going to make him even better in his comeback as a player. I think it's going to help his game in certain ways too. Now, whether that translates into PGA Tour wins or majors, that remains to be seen, but it's just so neat to see the way he is right now. I mean, it's just really nice.
And another compelling part about this weekend story for Tiger is that first day, they put a lot of big super groups together, I guess what they call them. They put the big name threesomes together, and they put Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, and Ricky Fowler in all together. And Ricky, all the kids love Ricky. My kids love Ricky. Everybody loves Ricky. He's a good-looking guy, and he's super nice to the fans. He signs thousands of autographs. He does videos after his round. If somebody has a cell phone camera out, he'll say hi to the camera and all that. And then you have Tiger and Phil, and Tiger and Phil were just awful on the first day. And Phil, I don't know, if this is a tournament he just decided he didn't need and was going to just stroll through and kind of take the weekend off, and I'm going to wear a shirt that everybody's going to talk about, which I thought was horrible, but he's out there to sell shirts or whatever. But after all that, with all those players playing so poorly, for Tiger to be able to kind of get himself back on track, I thought it was another good part of the story, because those three could have all completely collapsed and been hanging out at the hotel bar all weekend.
Well, he's Tiger. That's what Tiger is all about. And are we surprised he's the guy that set the bar so high for all these guys, the Jason Days and the Webb Simpsons and the Jordan Spieths? And, I mean, that bar was set really high, and that's how good he was. And we're seeing signs of that again, of how good he was. It's going to be fun to see him as his progression and watch the other guys that now they're seeing Tiger back. They hadn't seen him in a few years, and it kind of is probably going to reinvigorate some even of the younger guys that thought, okay, you know, Tiger's back in the picture. I'm really going to have to step up my game. And we're seeing that with guys like Webb Simpson, who had disappeared, and now he's back.
And I think it's also been a kick in the pants for Jason Day, who, for golf fans, know that Jason Day worshipped Tiger Woods when he was a kid. And they're friends today, and Jason Day's had a couple of off years with injuries and things, and he's been maybe invigorated a little bit by seeing Tiger come all the way back. Or not all the way back, but come back at least to the point of where he is right now.
Right, I think so too. And I think we had talked about this once before. I think you think Tiger circa 2000, I think the players today are better, especially some of the younger players are better than there were back then. And so there's so much more competition now, and they're all really feeding off of each other, which is kind of neat. And they all kind of seem to get along a lot, which is kind of neat. It's kind of neat to see. And Tiger fits in that too now. He's gotten to be, you know, closer with a lot of these guys because of Ryder Cups and President Cups and things like that. So it's just kind of it's a big club, and we're seeing them all kind of make each other better. And it's just going to keep being that way, I think, as long as everybody stays healthy. It's just fun to watch. It's neat to see how this summer is going to unfold.
You're listening to Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. I'm Brad Porter. We're talking with Howard Richmond, Associate Editor of GCM Magazine for the Golf Course Superintendents Association. Also wrote about golf a long time for the Kansas City Star. We're talking about the Players' Championship down in Florida, TPC Sawgrass. All right, Howard, you know this. If you go to the gas station or the grocery store and someone's got a Titleist hat on or some kind of golf polo shirt, you might strike up a conversation. Hey, how'd Tiger do today? How's Jordan doing? Where's Rory? He got knocked out, right? Nobody is going to ask about Webb Simpson. His name is just not going to come up in casual conversation unless you're at a golf course or around some golf aficionados. It's a name that doesn't go to the top of the list of people you ask about. But what he's done in the last 3 days to build a seven-shot lead, and to be careful when I said that, I almost slipped up, seven-shot lead against arguably the strongest field of any tournament this year is quite remarkable. And as you mentioned, he won the U.S. Open years ago, and you thought he was on the ascendance, and then he had the suspension a couple of years ago. And then, you know, he was one of those belly putter guys where the anchored stroke, you had the long putter that you put against your body. They outlawed that, and he had trouble dealing with that. How did he rebuild his game to get to be a guy who's leading the strongest field of the year?
Well, I think he kind of stayed the pace, kept doing what he believed in. And I think, obviously, the change in the putter is, you know, made a huge difference for him. And it's interesting. It was a year ago at the Players when he kind of started tinkering with the claw putting grip and really kind of transitioned from there. And look at him now. I mean, putting that together, I mean, he's been pretty flawless. He's hitting greens. He's making putts. It's one of those weekends. It's a magical weekend where everything's come together. But like I said, I remember him winning that U.S. Open and thinking, this guy's going to win multiple majors. He's not going to probably fall into that club with people like Trevor Immelman that's just going to win one, and you're never going to see him again. And he's just no signs of cracking, sticking to his game plan, pretty grounded, obviously. And I don't really see him slipping at all today. And it's kind of neat to see him back on the scene, because I always thought he was going to be on the scene for a while. But that's the game of golf. It comes and goes. But he found that putting, and look at him now. I mean, you know, what that means is he goes forward for the U.S. Open and PGA, British Open, I don't know. But it's just neat to see another guy emerge along with the Jordans and the Rorys and people like that.
With Webb Simpson sitting on a seven-shot lead, nobody has ever blown a seven-shot lead in the final round of a PGA event. Nobody. But if you're Webb Simpson and you haven't won since, I believe, 2013, the fall of 2013, if he were to start to slip a little bit, you've got Dustin Johnson lurking. You've got Jason Day lurking. You got Duffner. Danny Lee is right there at seven-shot. You have guys who can put together a magical round to where if Webb Simpson were to slip at all, that he could open the door and get in big trouble in a hurry.
He could definitely. And you know, I'm not going to go mow the lawn today until after I've watched his start. I'm gonna watch him. I want to see some of those opening holes of his and see how he does, because you know how that is with majors. You always see what happens early and see what, you know, what's going to transpire. But yeah, he's got some really good players back there, the Dustin Johnsons and Lee's a good player too. He's another guy that's kind of been an up and comer. So if he slips a little, he better watch out, because that kid can play. I mean, I've liked Danny Lee the last few years. I thought, well, that guy's going to win a major too. He's got the game. So it'll be interesting. I mean, seven stroke lead, yeah, it looks huge, but we've seen guys blow big leads before. So you just never know. That makes it fun to watch.
When you look at this golf course at the Players' Championship, I think it's great for television. It looks fantastic. The water seems to be in all the right spots, and especially the island hole at 17. But I'll ask you this, since you've covered a lot of golf in your time and spoken to a lot of golfers, that island hole on 17, that's where the fans gather around, they pack it in, because they all want to see something they haven't seen before, something unusual, something crazy. You either stick it right in the middle, or you hit the wood planks in the front and it goes in the water, or you come up short, or you go long and you're on the water on the other side. When you talk to the players, do they like that hole? Do they like the challenge? Or do they think, oh my gosh, I got to deal with this again, and it's right towards the end of my round, and these fans are going nuts, and half of them want me to splash it just to see it?
I think the majority of them like it. I think some of the guys, I think Tom Watson might have been one of those guys that would get to that hole and let's play it quick. Let's not think too much, because the more you think of that hole, it's going to become a problem for you. So my feeling is let's play 17, 18 times. I mean, if they played that hole over and over and over, I'd love it. I mean, it's so fun to watch. But I think it can get into their heads. So I think you'll see some guys that maybe stand over that too long, and that's going to mess them up. And I'm sure that's happened over the years. But let's give credit to the genius of Pete Dye. I mean, the architect of that course, and he just likes to keep people uncomfortable with his golf courses. And that's the way it's supposed to be. It's not supposed to be easy.
And what I like about it too is when I play golf with my kids, we play the little par three over at Heart of America. And there's water on the second hole. All you got to do is clear it by about 25 yards. But it's in our heads as amateurs, and we inevitably send two or three right into the water because that's what we do. But it's fun to see professionals. I don't want bad things to happen to them, but it's fun to see professionals, because if there was no water on that hole, if it was not an island, 90% of them would stick it within 15 to 20 feet of the hole, or maybe even closer, 5 feet, if there was no water at all. Throw the water out there, and as you said, it's a mind thing, and it's just like the professionals, just like the amateurs like us, it plays with your mind a little bit. It's kind of fun to see that it happens to somebody who's the best in the world.
Yeah, and it would kind of be neat to see it come down to today, what happens at 17. Now, who knows? The way Webb Simpson is playing, 17 may not matter at all, but if it does, that hole could play into things as you're coming down the last couple holes. So I'd love to see that.
We're talking with Howard Richmond, Associate Editor of GCM Magazine for the Golf Course Superintendents Association, talking about the Players' Championship down at TPC Sawgrass. This question has been asked a lot, not only this week, but over the last handful of years. We have four majors in golf, and the question is asked over and over again, and more every year, should the Players' Championship be considered a major, because they have the strongest field in golf? I think they have the top 57 players in the world what had started the tournament this year. It's always a strong field. The players believe it's very important, and they take a lot of pride in winning this championship. Do you believe yourself that it should be a major? And do you believe that golf will eventually make it a major, make it the fifth major?
Personally, I don't. I prefer them not to make it another major. I think it would kind of throw off the balance of four majors every year, and think about all the past players. If you were to consider, I mean, you're going to, you know, for instance, Jack Nicklaus winning the Players, you're going to add that to his total then? How are they going to do that?
Is it 19? Yeah, would it be 19 now?
Right, exactly. I don't think that they'll ever go to that. I think we'll just keep calling it the fifth major, even though it isn't. That's a good question. I'm not sure the Players probably wanted to go to that either as a fifth major, because it would kind of – golf is such a historical game, and I think it would just throw off the balance of it, and I don't think that'll happen. Just leave it as it is and enjoy it. It's nice to have another tournament that's like a major, but if it doesn't count towards that total, I'm perfectly fine with it.
Yeah, I think I heard Justin Leonard on the Golf Channel this week. They were doing a roundtable discussion about it, and he was asked about it. And he said, you know, I would rather it not be a major, like what you said. He said, because its prestige is its own thing, and being able to say you won the Players Championship makes it a standalone event versus I won three or four majors. Which ones did you win? Well, I won this, I won that, or whatever. This is a standalone big-time event.
It really is. And next year, obviously, as you know, it's going to change. Things are changing after this year. This is the last year of golf as we kind of know it, as far as with majors and the Players, with the Players going to March, and then you're going to have the PGA Championship in May. It's going to be a totally different kind of landscape next year. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And, you know, this summer, Brad, I'm kind of it's going to be a great summer. Like I said, the way these guys are playing, and you still have so much to play for besides the Players today, and you got the U.S. Open coming up, and Phil trying to get that slam, and then Spieth trying to get the career slam at PGA at Belle Reve across the state in St. Louis. So it's going to be interesting to see how everything plays out, and you know the Players always going to be a big part of golf, and it's going to be that fifth major. And you know, think about next year, you're going to have Masters, and you're going to have the Players, and you're going to go, you know, with the PGA earlier and U.S. Open. Boy, things are going to be lined up early. You know, it's before summer gets really, really hot. It's going to be, golf's going to be really hot. So it's going to be neat to see.
Yeah, you could set your season by June and just be, I won my Masters and I'm done.
Right.
Just need the...
Right. Yeah, it's going to be strange next year with no PGA in August. I mean, after the British Open in July, it's then you're just going to have World Cup events. That's going to be kind of a shift, but that's what they're going to do. So we'll see what happens.
All right, fantastic stuff. Hey, Howard, enjoy today's final round. We'll see if Webb Simpson holds on to his 7-shot lead and wins that Players Championship. And again, I'll be tuning in and watching hole number 17. I've been doing a lot of stuff this week, so I haven't had time to see what's online or streaming, but I'm wondering if they have a camera just for 17. I bet they do. So
they really should, shouldn't they? I love that hole.
Well, Howard, thanks again. I always appreciate your time. You joined us for the Masters after you'd been there with your wife for a few days, and that was fun, and I appreciate you joining us to talk about this, and hopefully we'll get you on again as we play in bigger tournaments later in the summer.
Well, my pleasure, Brad. Thanks for having me, and happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. They're the best.
Fantastic.
That's why we're here.
Fantastic sentiment. I played. We lost our mom about close to 25 years ago, but she was trying to learn how to play golf later in life. My brother and I had played, but we didn't know what we were doing. We just kind of knocked it around, and we took a trip down to Tantara one year, and my mom said, "I want to play the course." I'm like, "Mom, this is a really big course. We're not ready for this yet. I'm playing, gosh darn it, because if I'm going to learn how to play, I've got to just do it." So my mom made us go out there and play the big course down at Tantara, so that was fun.
That's cool. That's a neat memory. That's
yeah.
A really neat memory.
Absolutely. Well, Howard, thank you very much. Appreciate the good thoughts.
Thanks. Take care, Brad.
All right, that is Howard Richmond, Associate Editor of GCM Magazine for the Golf Course Superintendents Association, talking about the Players' Championship. For television, I've never been there in person, but on TV, it's terrific to look at and watch. And lots of stories in this one with Tiger Woods and Jordan Spieth throwing up 65s yesterday, but still being 11 shots back, and Webb Simpson leading by 7 going into the final round. So we'll see how it unfolds today. All right, we'll take a quick timeout. Plenty more still to come. We'll talk about the big race at Kansas Speedway last night. And Kevin Harvick just keeps on winning at Kansas Speedway. And then later in the show, Joshua Briscoe is going to join us as he gets set for baseball tonight at 11 o'clock. And we'll talk about probably a little bit about everything. You're listening to Sports Sunday. My name is Brad Porter. Rudy Salazar is running the show from our Rally House studios. And you're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I've got another confession to make.
Welcome back to Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. I am Brad Porter. Rudy Salazar is running the show today. Jed Marshall got us linked up with all of our guests. Our thanks to Howard Richman from the Golf Course Superintendents Association, talking a little Players Championship. Said I love watching it on TV. Kirk Elliott's coming up at 10 o'clock. Talk about Kevin Harvick's latest win at Kansas Speedway, because that's just what he does now, is win at Kansas Speedway. And then Josh Briscoe at 10:40. Talking about everything. And then at 11 o'clock, baseball tonight with Josh Briscoe. Get you ready for Kansas City and Cleveland with the 12:10 first pitch. Then at 2 o'clock this afternoon, the NBA pregame show. And at 2:30, it's Cavaliers and Celtics. Now, the Cavaliers and Celtics, it seems like we've been off for a week in the NBA playoffs because there were so many sweeps in the last round. So it's been a week without NBA basketball. Which is, it's not actually a week, but it's been a long time. So, leave it to Marcus Morris, former Kansas Jayhawks great, to throw some hot sauce on this game going into tonight. So, Marcus Morris, who will probably be guarding LeBron James for the most part for the Celtics when he's on the floor, when Marcus Morris is on the floor. Marcus Morris talked about defending against LeBron James. That he's going to make it tough. He knows he's one of the best in the NBA. But, quote, personally, I think I'm probably the best guy at defending LeBron James in the league outside of Kawhi Leonard. Asked about defending James. He went head-to-head with LeBron James in the 15-16 playoffs when Marcus Morris was with the Detroit Pistons. He said, well, that was fun. That was my first time being in the playoffs. Being able to go against one of the best players, if not the best, it was definitely a good time. I'm a little older. I'm a little more experienced. Some of the numbers back him up a little bit. That he's had a pretty good run at playing against LeBron James. I was looking for the number. I just had it up. Okay, here's the number. And this is by a company called Second Spectrum. They do advanced metrics for NBA numbers. So against in Boston's win against the Cavaliers during the regular season, Marcus Morris limited James to 13 points on 4 of 11 shooting, over 30 possessions, and he was Boston's best defender against LeBron that day. So, Rudy, I don't know if it's a good idea. If you've seen how LeBron's played in the playoffs so far, you can be confident. Marcus Morris, I like the confidence, okay? Great! I'm not sure if you want to throw it out publicly. I think I'm the best at defending him. I don't know. Maybe you get in his head a little bit. Can you get in LeBron James' head? I doubt it. I don't think so.
Yeah, there's also the thing that, like, and I think, like, what he said, I don't think is necessarily wrong. Like, he is one of the better guys at defending LeBron. Now, the best guys at defending LeBron is still not very good. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
If LeBron goes for 28-7, you actually did pretty well against
right.
him. But that's still a pretty, like, by obviously LeBron standards, it's not a good game. But let's. Not a terrible game by any
right.
means. So it's like, I saw a lot of people, and like a lot of people just like, you know, why would you say something? I mean, like, I don't think it's like that outlandish. I guess he's not saying
no, it's not.
Yeah,
outrageous.
He's not saying
he didn't
he's
say
gonna,
I'm better than LeBron. Or
yeah,
something.
He's not saying I'm going to stop him.
Right.
Just that he's probably outside of Kawhi, you know, one of the better guys like out there. And again, like the numbers, I think back it up. Like,
yeah.
And part of it's because like the size wise, like he's one of the few guys in the NBA who is about the same size as LeBron. About, you know, as athletic. Now, he's obviously not as big, as strong, not as athletic, but he kind of has that size, that athleticism to kind of stay with him a little bit, but it's not easy, and especially right now, because, like, now, a lot of people, though, are viewing this as, I'm going to shut him down.
He put some hot sauce on that. Whether he knew it or not, he did.
Yeah, so LeBron goes out and gets that triple-double in this series, it's not going to look good.
We had, was it Kurt Heelan was on last week from NBCSports.com, and LeBron's worst game was still a triple-double in these playoffs. Worst game was still a triple-double.
He's been, I mean, he's just been
I mean,
unbelievable.
That's insanity.
It's been, and this is where obviously, like, it just gets annoying because, like, obviously anything LeBron does, you're obviously going to get the comparisons with MJ. Like, this is one of those times where it's just kind of like, just don't worry about it. Just sit back and watch. Because, like, LeBron's just doing stuff that's, I mean, LeBron's playing his best basketball at 33 now.
Yeah.
Like, he's starting, he's at that age where, in theory, players start to decline.
Especially since he came into the league at 18.
And he's playing his best.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he's not a player, and he's played, obviously, a ton of playoff minutes. It's like with Kobe when he retired, it was like five or six extra seasons if you counted just like the playoff minutes.
Right.
Like, that's like LeBron's in that area where he plays, because he's in the finals every year.
Yeah.
He plays basically all game long, and it's insane.
And that's the same with, like, Jordan and Pippen. If you add in all their playoff games, it was like six or seven extra seasons of NBA play. I think it's critical for the Celtics not only to perform well, but to win on the home floor tonight. They have not lost a home game in these playoffs. They're 7-0 at home. And the Cavaliers, in their first series of the playoffs against the Pacers, got pushed to seven games. And I think everybody thought, like I thought, getting pushed to seven games in the first round, this may not end well for them. They may be ending their streak of getting to the finals, to the NBA finals, for a fourth shot at the Warriors if they make it through. Then they sweep out the Raptors without, they had some competitive games. They weren't all blowouts, but that was more what you expect from LeBron James and the Cavs. Now, with the Celtics, on their home floor, after seeing what they did to the Raptors, never letting them get a moment to breathe, it's critical to not only play well, but to get a win on your home floor in the first round of the Eastern Conference Finals. All right, we will get set to take a quick timeout before we head to our final hour. Coming up next, Kirk Elliott, part of the Racing Boys, which you hear regularly here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, is going to join us and talk about the race last night at Kansas Speedway, the KC Masterpiece 400, won by Kevin Harvick, his third consecutive win at Kansas Speedway. And then later in the next hour, Joshua Briscoe, who just got here, is going to join us. He's going to host baseball tonight at 11, and we're going to talk about a little bit about everything, because you never know where the conversation is going to go. So we'll take a quick timeout. You're listening to Sports Sunday. My name is Brad Porter. Rudy Salazar is running the show here in our Rally House studios, and you're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB.